This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
True crime fans will love Crime House True Crime Stories, a Crime House original podcast. Every Monday, you'll experience the most notorious true crime cases from that week in history, all linked by a common theme, from serial killers to disappearances to unsolved murders and so much more. Follow and listen to Crime House True Crime Stories, an Odyssey podcast in partnership with Crime House Studios, available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Wake on up, Who Dat Nation. It is the season finale today in Tampa Bay, a noon kickoff between the Bucs and the Saints. Unfortunately, for a fourth straight year for New Orleans, no postseason for the black and gold. The Buccaneers looking to win the division for a fourth straight year. And, you know, the thing with this year, things started out with such a bang. And it's hard to even fathom those first 2 weeks of we were dizzy with how great things were looking for this Saints squad going into the year. And then after that, just a whole bunch of misery and pain.
It's kind of come back to be a curse, hasn't it? I mean,
right. Only a top 10 pick when it should have been maybe a top five.
I mentioned this last week. If you look at last year's draft, Steve, 5-12, which is what the Saints record would be if they lose today. Double digit, 2 touchdown underdogs to Tampa Bay.
Right.
Would have gotten you a top five pick. The Chargers were 5-12 last year, and they were picking five. That's how they got Joe Alt,
right?
And that's when they moved on from Brandon Staley, all that good stuff. There were a couple teams ahead of them that were 4-13, and I think, you know, the Bears ended up getting the Panthers pick, and the Panthers were like 2-15 or something around there. This year, let me read you the Tankathon draft order, and we'll get into Deuce's talk about the tank.
Right.
The bottom of the league is so bad that it's like the worst case scenario, in all honesty, for the Saints to have been this bad this year. Because, you know, last year's draft was
just
loaded.
Not bad enough.
I know. It was loaded with quarterback talent. And so, you know, six guys go in the top 12. But if you remember the Falcons, when they picked Michael Penix, going back to them for real quick, they were 7-10 and they had the 8th overall pick. Steve, 7-10 might get you like 14 this year. It doesn't even get you close. So, if you're looking at the top of the draft, Cleveland's 3-14, and then you have three other teams with three wins with New England, Tennessee, and New York. So that's 1-4. You have four teams that have three wins right now. But after that, Jacksonville, Carolina, the Jets, the Raiders, and the Bears. I'll repeat. Jacksonville, Carolina, the Jets, the Raiders, and the Bears. That's five teams. All have four wins.
Unreal.
Steve, four wins last year. There were three teams that had four wins, and then a fourth that had fewer than four wins. This year, there's nine. So the Saints and the people that are rooting for the tank, I understand, right? But as of now, with strength of schedule, which is the metric that they use to determine tiebreakers, you know, the harder your schedule is, if you finish with a worse record, then it means that you're likely a better team, so you'll finish a little bit lower. For the Saints, via the strength of schedule, they would need Chicago to beat Green Bay and Vegas to beat the Chargers for them to move up. And they'd have to lose. So, you know, you go through this run where you've won three games in 14 games. And you're thinking, oh, well, this has been miserable. And typically when that happens, when you have that type of stretch where you win 3 of 14, you're usually picking near the top five. But for the Saints right now, it's not out of the question that they pick at 10. Now, it is possible that they do move up, but those that think that they can move up to, like, top five, it's just not feasible.
Right.
It's not going to happen.
You can get to maybe number 8 if you're lucky.
Correct, and that's what I was saying. Like, if Vegas and Chicago win because they have higher strength of schedules, they would leapfrog you if they win and you lose. But that's all you really have. Now, on the inverse, like, San Francisco is behind you at 11, and then you have a couple 7-9 teams. So the Saints are going to, like, if they win today, they wouldn't move much further down than pick 10, but they're not going to move much further up. If they lose, they would need some other teams to win for them to leapfrog. So you know, once again, if you're looking at how they lost to the Packers and then they lost this past week, you're hoping that they can move up, and it didn't happen because right. there's so many bad teams in the NFL this year that are going to finish with four wins or less. It's on, like, I don't think I've ever seen this, Steve. I don't know. Like, typically when you finish five and 12, like, you would get close to a top five pick. The Saints might be picking around 10.
Yeah, don't count on this black and gold bunch to mail things in this season finale. They're out to win, and here's what Saints color analyst Deuce McAllister had to say about, don't be thinking that this Saints team is going out there thinking about tanking.
I'm trying to win a game, and this football team hadn't won a game, and it's been a couple weeks, and they are trying to win a football game, and you're going to be going against a team. This would be their fourth consecutive NFC South championship, so if you could stop that, I think you would feel pretty good about yourselves.
Right, something to feel good about there, stopping the Bucs from taking the division, although I know a lot of Houdats not too keen on that since it means that Atlanta would potentially, you know, not potentially, they would end up winning the division.
Right, but that's what I was saying the last hour. That's the best case scenario.
Saints win.
Is that you beat the Buccaneers and you give the Falcons fans hope.
And Carolina thinking, wins, that'd be great.
And they're thinking, oh, we can sneak into the playoffs. The Saints actually helped us out here. They beat a really red-hot Bucs squad that's won five of their last six. They're trending towards the playoffs. And they own the tiebreaker because they swept them. But then they lose to the Panthers. Man, that's I think, the dream scenario here, Steve. That's what I would be rooting for.
What is something that Deuce McAllister is looking from this Saints team in the season finale? What's he need to see for this black and gold in the finish?
You're looking for some offense. That's what you're looking for. You're looking for some offense and some consistency just because you're without wide receiver one, two, and more than likely you're starting tailback. And so, this Saints team, they've played hard. But it's been penalties and mistakes. That is what's hurt them, you know, particularly over the last month or so when you talk about some of the games that they've been in.
Yeah, looking for offense, indeed. It's been a struggle with Spencer Rattler at quarterback. We understood why Coach Darren Rizzi wanted to see, hoped to see Derek Carr in this season finale because the Saints haven't won a game when he's missed. So something for Spencer Rattler to try and get under his belt in this game as well to achieve a victory without Derek Carr. But there's just so many other pieces missing. We don't expect Alvin Kamara to be part of this game. He is doubtful dealing with a groin injury. We know no Taysom Hill. Chris Olave is also out. Rashid Shaheed has been out. Just been a whole mishmash of a mess with injuries this season and has really doomed this black and gold team, especially, man, on the offensive side of the ball. It's been ruthless.
Yeah, so with, as you mentioned, no Derek Carr in this game. With Spencer Rattler this year, point totals, he scored 27 against the Buccaneers, all came in the first half. We remember that incredible second quarter.
Yeah.
Denver, the team scored 10, but he scored 3, the touchdown drive by Jake Hainer at the end of that game. Against the Chargers, terrific defense, he scored 8 points. Washington, he came on in relief in the second half, scored 19 in the second half. Green Bay shut out, and then Vegas, they put up 10 points. So, yes, the scoring offense has not been there with Spencer Rattler at the helm. Now, as you mentioned, Steve, who's really around him? No Olave again today, which Mike was really championing for him not to play. There's no real reason for it. And Deuce echoed it as well. The guy suffered 2 concussions this year. You don't really want to throw him out there. And if he gets lit up in the middle of the field again, then you just kind of look stupid. So, yes, he's sitting this game. Kendra Miller also suffered a concussion. He's out. Alvin Kamara is doubtful. Like, your weapons are just diminished. No Rashid Shaheed, he's been out for quite some time now.
Featuring Foster Moreau, heavy.
Foster Moreau, Juwan Johnson. It feels like we've said this every week for like the past 5 weeks. It's like Foster Moreau, Juwan Johnson, Marquez Valdes-Scantling.
Yeah, at least MVS is back to a full go at practice this week because that's wide receiver number one right now, as crazy as that is.
Yeah, and you get your final look at Spencer Rattler. And, you know, if Carr was playing in this game, I'd be interested to know what the spread would be. It obviously would not be 2 touchdowns, but Vegas has seen how
maybe
the Saints 11, have performed.
12 still. I don't know.
I don't even know if it would be that high,
really?
In all honesty. I think it would be at most like 10. But, I mean, maybe I'm wrong. The Saints' offense looks different with Derek Carr operating. He's a veteran. He's been there, done that.
Right.
Spencer Rattler's the rookie. And so I'm putting more really on the Saints' defense in this game than I am the offense. Steve, the Saints defense really got gashed the first time around. And I used it in my Sunday morning report that the first time they played, Tampa Bay's rushing attack just bowled over them.
And they didn't have their main guys around.
Yeah, I mean, it was Sean. Well, Bucky Irving did play in that game, and Irving's been really the revelation for them.
Wasn't he dinged up in that matchup, though?
He had, like, about 14 carries, so he tied with Sean Tucker for it. But in that game, I mean, they just – the Saints' rushing defense has been maligned this year, and rightfully so. But that was probably their worst performance of the year against Tampa Bay's rushing attack. Now, to be fair, Tampa Bay's rushing attack is top five in the NFL. And that's part, as we mentioned, that's part of the reason why their offense has kind of been revitalized this year. But with the Buccaneers, I think in that first game, I'm getting the correct number up. I believe it was 277 total yards and 7.9 yards per carry. I mean, you're not going to stop a nosebleed if you're giving up that type of production in the ground game. Let me make sure I double check myself here. 277 rushing yards on 35 attempts, good for 7.9 yards per carry. Sean Tucker had 136 yards on 14 carries, which was 9.7 yards per carry. Bucky Irving, 81 yards on 14 carries, 5.6 yards per carry. And then, you know, Baker Mayfield had a little bit of rushing production, as did Sterling Shepard. So, and we'll get to the audio from James Jarko as well. Bucky Irving, Rashad White is kind of their 1-2 punch. The Saints' run defense has been gashed at times this year. I mean, you saw it last week with the Raiders. Right. The Raiders, who had the worst rushing offense in the NFL, basically doubled their average.
Amir Abdullah, his first 100-yard rushing game ever.
It's been bad. 139.1 yards per game allowed on the ground, which is 28th in the NFL for the Saints' rushing defense. So it's strength versus weakness here for Tampa Bay. I mean, expect them to run early and often is what I'm trying to say.
For sure. You're going to definitely test that Saints front there. We're going to take a break. When we get back, we'll get into some of the Saints offense and the rookies on that side of the ball. Quarterback Spencer Rattler, also in left tackle Taliese Fuwaga. We'll hear from both of those rookies when we get back after the break here on First Take. So stay tuned on WWL. Be back right after this. Welcome back into First Take. Steve Geller, Charlie Long, and Cullen Steele bringing you to 10 a.m. That's when the Bud Light countdown to kickoff takes over with the Cajun Cannon Bobby Hebert, as we get ready for that noon kickoff season finale in Tampa Bay. The Saints trying to play spoiler and prevent the Bucs from winning their fourth straight NFC South title. We'll get to see Spencer Rattler under center. Derek Carr still a no-go for the black and gold. It'll be Spencer Rattler making his sixth career NFL start, the rookie getting ready for that action. And we talked to him in the locker room during the week, and here's what Rattler had to say to the media as he prepares to take on the Buccaneers.
Spencer, what do you kind of want to see from yourself in the offense in the final game against the Bucs?
Yeah, just a complete game. You know, we put halves together, we put quarters together, but just put together a full game. That's the goal.
What do you think you're doing better now than you were in starts two or start four?
Mm-hmm. I think just more settled in, you know, seeing stuff a little better, you know, extending when I need to, running when I need to, and just trying to get the ball, you know, to our playmakers, you know, but we got to do it. I got to do it. We got to do it as a group, players and coaches, the whole game. You know, we start out one half hot. We can't come out stale the second, and just create momentum, create a rhythm throughout the whole game.
When you went back and watched the last game, what kind of stood out about the second half?
Yeah, just mistakes, like on our end. I mean, if it was, you know, a missed throw, a missed opportunity, a drop, a holding call, a penalty, you know, just dumb stuff that we can clean up, you know. And you look back at the tape, and we were rolling that first half. That second half was our own mistakes, shooting ourselves in the foot on big plays, you know, horrible on third down in the second half, and you know, in multiple areas. So we all got to be better in that case.
Does this year either change the way that you go about the offseason or inform what you need to work on, those sorts of
things? Yeah, this will be my first like full off season in a while. So really attacking every area. You know, I don't have one thing circled, but just want to make myself even a better player. You know, I feel like I'm not even scratching the surface yet. I want to take it to a whole nother level coming back next year, no matter what happens. So my mindset stays the same.
You kind of touched on this in the past. What does Derek meant for you while you had this opportunity?
Yeah, I mean, he's been great since day one. You know, I look back to the day I got drafted. He was one of the first guys to call me and say he's excited to get to work. And, you know, he's been awesome throughout the whole year. Being able to learn from him, ask him questions, pick his brain, and just watch how he plays, because he does it the right way. It does the right way in and out the building. I mean, ultimate character, ultimate father figure. He's been a great great leader for our room and team.
You kind of doing like the autopsy of your performance, like after the fact, separate from the team result. Like,
yeah.
How do you evaluate the plays that like you made that didn't count because there's like a penalty over here? Yeah. Like, how does that kind of equate into how you view yourself?
Yeah, I mean, I think you're confident because we made those plays, and you know it's unfortunate we had some things not go our way with penalties and stuff like that. But you know, my job is to get the ball out, give my guys a chance, and control what I can. So if I control what I can, you know, I'll feel good about myself. I felt good about last game. I just want to put a full game together. You know, and those two plays, for example, those are probably two scores, 14 points, you know, for us. So that's big. So, you know, focusing on all those little areas, we've been doing that this week. And, you know, we want to finish out strong. It's the last game. I know we're not playing for anything, but we're playing for New Orleans. We're playing for ourselves, playing for pride, and we want to have a good showing.
Said yesterday is it feels like over the course of these five starts, now six, you've seen you get more comfortable in the huddle, kind of getting in and out, running the offense. Would you say the same thing about yourself, and you know, what have you kind of learned throughout this process?
Yeah, I think definitely better with, you know, command in the huddle, you know, from the first start to now, just super comfortable in the huddle, you know, looking guys in the eye saying, hey, you know, be ready for this right here. Expect this. Ball's going to be here on this timing. Just communication. You know, I think the leadership part of it, being a rookie, you know, kind of coming out of your shell because you're the guy with the ball in your hands each play, being comfortable to not get after anybody, but be a vocal leader and do what you got to do to help your team. And, you know, I know it's been a tough year for our group, but, you know, we keep fighting. I keep fighting. And, you know, we got one more opportunity to try to go put it together.
Saints quarterback Spencer Rattler trying to get a win under his belt his rookie year since taking over this black and gold team. He's passed for a 55.9 completion percentage this year. He has three touchdowns, the five interceptions. Another glaring negative, I would say, for him has been also the fumbles. He's got five there. So turnovers and getting better with your completion percentage is something we need to see out of Spencer Rattler in this. And I know that there have been instances, obviously, when penalties have hurt some of his drives, but overall, it's been a mixed bag from Rattler, and we expect that from the rookie, but still need to see that next step to see if he can be a legitimate starting quarterback in the NFL. Right now, I still don't think he's proven that.
Yeah, and he's talked about attacking the offseason and what he wants to accomplish in his first full offseason in the NFL. I want to go back to his comment, Steve, about, you know, playing a full game.
Yeah.
And I think the first
half was great.
Well, the first game that he played in the NFL against this Tampa Bay Buccaneers team, I don't think it describes that better than that, right? Like, you get off to a 17-0 hole, and you're thinking, oh, boy, the rookie quarterback has got to figure out how to get out of this, or else this could get ugly quick. The second quarter, the Saints blitz right back, and they score 27 points, and they go up 27-24 entering halftime. But then after that, you know, the complete game thing fell apart. The second half against the Buccaneers, punt, 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 interception, punt, interception, end of game. You know, that kind of set the tone a little bit for the inconsistencies that you've seen from Rattler so far this year, because he has shown flashes. Like, the
first half of last week was fantastic.
He'll rip some throws, and you're like, okay, this kid he's got the arm talent. Like, he's legit. But then it's not consistent. And he's a rookie, and you're not expecting it to be, you know, Jaden Daniels or, you know, what C.J. Stroud was last year, right? Like, it's just not realistic. So, but what you want to see from him, and Jeff mentioned this as well when we were talking with him, you would love to see him pick up his first win entering the offseason. Like, that's a huge confidence boost, especially against a really good Bucs team that's red hot right now. As we mentioned, their last six games, they're 5-1. And they're trending towards the playoffs as a team that not many teams in the postseason want to play in the NFC playoff picture. Spencer Rattler, that's what I would say. You want to see, you know, that full game that he's talking about, where he's consistent throwing the ball and maybe not putting up, you know, 35 points in this game, but being competitive against a good Bucs team is what you want to see.
Another inconsistent issue all season long for the Saints was along the offensive line, whether because of injuries or because you have a lot of young talent you're still breaking in there as well. One of those is rookie Taliese Fuaga. He also spoke to the media this week as he gets ready to wrap up the season and get his take on what it was like being a rookie in the NFL this year. Here's what Taliese Fuaga had to say getting ready for the Bucs.
I guess right now, kind of put your rookie season into perspective, you know, one last game, and They had high hopes for you, obviously, and seems as if they believe, and you know, everyone else believes that you've lived up to those expectations.
Yeah. You know what I mean? For myself, I just feel like kind of the season just goes up and down. You know what I mean? I think that's just the way it goes. You know what I'm saying? You're going to have good games. You're going to have bad games. Good plays, bad plays. But, you know, if that's what they think, that's what they think. I kind of just want to, you know, play my own game and just, I know I got a lot of work to do, so.
What did you learn the most this season?
That it's a long season. I mean, that's probably the number one thing. Probably taking care of your body and all those kind of stuff. So,
was there a point this year where that really sunk in? Like, okay, yeah, like this is different?
Yeah, probably like maybe the first game. You know what I'm saying? I don't know. It's really just, you know, it's a blessing, but at the same time, it's not easy. So,
when you say ups and downs, did you kind of feel like, you know, okay, I make two steps forward, and then you have a game where you felt like, you know, now I got to figure out something else different than what I came in thinking I needed to figure out?
Yeah, for sure. You know, obviously sometimes I feel like I'm getting some progress, but then, you know, might have a game or maybe a couple plays that I feel like, man, I wasn't at my best, or what could I have done better? And that's just, you know, just simple things like watching the film, you know what I mean? So,
is that the Denver game for you?
Yeah, for sure. Denver game, I mean, Chiefs game. You can say a lot of games, really. A lot of games like that. Just got to watch the film and see how I can be better and just watch the little things, so.
You know, one thing Clint talked about was Spencer kind of getting more confident, more comfortable in the huddle. Have you kind of noticed that over the last
time? Yeah, for sure. I think he's getting that kind of feel out there, you know what I mean? He's kind of telling guys, hey, speed it up, or, you know, do this and that. And, you know, Spence, like I said before, I feel like he's already had that kind of like vet feel and stuff, but he's still learning like those little things that I couldn't tell you about, but he's learning them, so.
Saints rookie left tackle there, Taliese Fuaga, was the Saints' first overall pick, first pick in the 2024 draft, number 14 overall. Haven't heard a lot of him being mentioned this season, and I guess that's always a good thing with an offensive lineman, but there's definitely been the highs for Fuaga and some lows as well. I feel like the first half of the season might have been better for him, but that's also when you had the offensive line mainly intact.
So with Fuaga, I think he's going to be great, in all honesty, and I think he's been off to a good start. Yes, there has been lows, the Denver game, as he mentioned, and as he mentioned himself, the Kansas City game, but Fuaga, I think, is a hit. And out of the first round, which is a good sign for the Saints that they hit on a draft pick. Now, it was a huge need entering last offseason.
Oh, yeah.
And it was a really good class for tackles, so you had to go get one. And they got one. And I think Fuaga is going to be a solid, solid player in the NFL for a long time. This game, I am more nervous about the interior of the Saints' offensive line. You don't have Eric McCoy, and you don't have Lucas Patrick. Both of them have been placed on the IR to end their seasons. This was a couple weeks ago. So you have Shane Lemieux starting at center. I think Oli Udoh is going to be starting at left guard. You're going against Kalijah Kancey and Vita Vea,
who have been lethal, right?
The Bucs are an interesting team, Steve, because their pass rush production isn't bad, but a ton of it's from the interior.
Right.
Like, they don't have much pressure off the edges. Like, that's probably, if you're Jason Light, the GM of Tampa Bay, and you're looking at the number one need for this Bucs team entering the offseason, like it was for the Saints at offensive tackle last year, for the Buccaneers, it's edge. It's getting a pass rusher off the edge. Yeah, Diaby's been okay, right? But, I mean, outside of that, they don't have much pressure off the edge. Logan Hall, you know, whatever. Vita Vea and Kalijah Kancey have been their studs on the interior. Both former first-round picks, by the way. So Jason Light and the Tampa Bay Buccaneers have been hitting on some of these picks. Kalijah Kancey, in 11 games played this year, 7.5 sacks. Vita Vea has played 15, 6 sacks. And Vita Vea fits like the profile of a nose tackle, by the way. Like, he is gigantic. He's a space eater.
Magic,
so he's a monster in the run game, but he's also getting a ton of pass rush production as well. He's a freak for his size. Like, he's one of those, you know, Bruce Feldman has the Feldman's freaks every year for the draft. Like, Vita Vea is a freak. He's a freak of a human being. So those two on the interior really scare me if I'm the Saints in game planning for this Buccaneers defense.
Right, because you know that pressure's coming right up the gut against
Right
Spencer.
Up the gut. And that's where they're strongest is, once again, those two defensive tackles. I guess Tampa Bay plays a 3-4, so technically Kalijah Kancey's listed as a defensive end. But he plays the interior. Those two guys versus Oli Udoh and Shane Lemieux, when you don't have Eric McCoy playing in this game, yeah, that's where you're really worried.
We are going to take a break. When we get back, we'll get into some of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers audio, hear from James Yarko from the Locked On Bucs podcast about Mike Evans. We can play spoiler for him as well, trying to achieve a record for the Buccaneers, and then a little breakdown of the Buccaneers running game led by Bucky Irving. We're going to get to a break right back after this, though, on First Take, so stay tuned here on WWL. Welcome back here to First Take. Steve Geller, Charlie Long, Cullen Steele bringing it up till 10 a.m., coming up with the countdown to kickoff with the Cajun Cannon. Looking at this Buccaneers squad going into this game against the Saints, they have a chance to achieve a fourth straight NFC South title. Also, an interesting bit with some records on the line for the Buccaneers and wide receiver Mike Evans, who's chasing an 11th 1,000-yard rushing season. James Yarko receiving. Of the Locked On. Yeah, what did I say? Rushing?
Yeah.
Receiving year for Evans. James Yarko of the Locked On Buccaneers podcast, dropped by fans in the Pro on Friday, talked about that. And here's what he had to say about Mike Evans chasing that achievement as he gets ready for the Saints.
It means everything to Baker to get Mike Evans that 1,000-yard mark. You know, he would extend his own NFL record for consecutive seasons to start a career, but then, of course, tie Jerry Rice's all-time record for consecutive 1,000-yard seasons, and it means a lot. But at the same time, you know, Mike is the kind of player that would trade that streak for a win and a division crown and a chance to go to the postseason. And these guys know that the game comes first. And if they go out and they play their game and they establish the run with Bucky Irving and they're doing what they've done for the better part of the last 2 months, that 85 yards is going to come. But I think when you take a look at the significance of what that record means, not just to Mike Evans and Baker Mayfield, but to the franchise, to the fans, you know, who have repeatedly year after year after year talked about how Mike Evans is one of the most overlooked wide receivers in the NFL and people still not believing that he's a Hall of Famer. It does mean a lot, but I don't think they're going to sacrifice the opportunity to win a game just to force Mike Evans the football.
Mike Evans, an 11th straight 1,000-yard receiving season, needs 85 yards today. If that's another thing the Saints can play spoiler role in and stopping him from getting that. And obviously we know there is quite a history between the Saints and Mike Evans. Even though Marshawn Lattimore is not around anymore, it'd still be nice to stick it to him and not give him a 1,000-yard receiving season.
I'm so petty, Steve.
Well, that's all we have left.
I'm throwing three guys in Mike Evans every play. No, I mean, like, but if you look at what's happened in recent weeks, because Mike Evans was injured at points throughout the season, so he hasn't played, you know, 17 games. This will be, I think, his 14th. The amount of targets that he's getting from Baker Mayfield, Baker is force-feeding to try and make sure that he gets that record. Like, he's doing all he can. And as we mentioned, Baker will throw some up, and DBs will have a chance to make a play on a ball. Last five games, Steve, 12 targets, 5 targets, 11 targets, 8 targets, 9 targets. He is getting force-fed every single game. And as far as yard production, 118, 69, 159, and that very impressive win over the Chargers, 69 in the loss to Dallas, and then 97 last week in the victory over Carolina. So he's put himself in position to where, yes, he can set that record, 11 straight 1,000-yard season. I don't want him to do it.
No, like you said, between the history he's had with the Saints.
I don't like Mike Evans.
No, exactly.
I don't think a lot of Saints fans like Mike Evans, so they're right there with me. Maybe not necessarily throw three guys at him every play, like I was jokingly saying, but do everything you can to make sure he doesn't get it. I mean, that's another thing to play for. Like, you're not just playing spoiler for, you know, the Buccaneers missing the playoffs potentially if you can beat them and the Falcons were to win against Carolina. But yeah, I mean, break that streak. Be the team to do it. And the Saints' defensive backfield, you know, entering the year, we thought it was going to be a strength. Marshawn Lattimore is gone. Paulson Adebo suffered a major injury, season-ending injury early on in the season. The Saints' passing defense ranks 27th in the NFL, Steve. 239.9 yards per game given up.
Woof.
And Baker Mayfield has been lighting it up recently. So he is going to throw, I would say, at least 10 targets Mike Evans' way.
Another issue, you look at the passing defense from the Saints, run defense.
Yes.
Obviously, another big issue for the black and gold. And they're going to have to deal with a lethal combo and Bucky Irving, Rashad White for Tampa Bay. And Bucky Irving this year is averaging 5.5 yards a carry. Ooh. He's got 7 touchdowns on the season. James Yarko of the Locked On Bucks was asked by Deuce and Mike Haas, when did he know that Bucky Irving was going to be a special player?
He was pretty early on knowing what he was capable of. Yet he's Pro Football Focus's most elusive running back in the NFL this year. Very rarely does the first guy actually bring him down. And it wasn't until he started getting more opportunities that he was really able to explode the way that he has. You know, you still have Rashad White, who is a really, really good running back, but Bucky has just been able to take it to another level. You know, Rashad's a little bit bigger. He's not quite as fast. He's a little bit stronger. And Bucky's been that elusive guy. And so as he's continued to progress, of course, Liam Cohen has gotten him more and more involved in the offense. So that's when he's been able to get, you know, 16 or 18 carries, and he's been able to rip off 150-yard games. And you know, they've realized that the more opportunities he has, the better he gets. He's one of those guys, you know, that just gets better as the game progresses, whether that's because he gets a better feel for the game and he's a little bit more adept to the flow, or it's because the defenses are wearing down later in games. But Bucky Irving is a guy, ever since training camp, that really the Bucks knew they had someone special to join Rashad in the backfield. And you kind of feel a little bit for Rashad losing kind of his running back one status, but as a duo, they're one of the best duos in the NFL. And a lot of that has to do with how elusive and how quick Bucky Irving is. And then when you can throw it, the power of Rashad at defenses, it really works out well for the Bucks. And this is a team that was one of the worst in the NFL the last couple of years in running the football. And the addition of Bucky Irving has skyrocketed them into the top 5.
RIP to Bucky Irving's Oregon Ducks in the college football playoff.
Yeah, I mean, that ripped up your bracket, Steve.
Toast.
Yeah, we have them in the control room there. I mean, I had Texas versus Georgia, so a little bit of SEC bias, but we'll see what happens. As far as Bucky Irving goes, I mean, Yarko put it perfectly. Like, he has helped revolutionize this Tampa Bay Bucks
offense.
Fourth
round pick, too.
He's been, like, because he doesn't have the size, right? He's all of 5'10", you know, under 200 pounds.
Yeah.
So he's not the biggest guy in the world, but man, is he shifty, and he is hard to bring down. He's slippery. He's got great – and this is also a thing that's a little bit underrated about him. He's really good in the passing game as well. He's fourth on the team in receiving yards this year, Steve, to go along with over 1,000 yards as a rookie running back and 5.5 yards per carry. So 188 carries, and it's the split backfield because Rashad White's got 144 on the year. Those two guys have combined for basically 1,600 yards this season as a running back duo. But also, once again, with Bucky Irving, he's caught 45 receptions on 47 targets this year. Really good hands. And he's got just under 400 yards in the passing game. So, Bucky Irving, that's a name that Saints fans will probably, you know, hear early and often today, I would have to imagine. Because
definitely highlighted as my biggest concern for the defense.
Yeah, so my biggest concern for the Saints offense, as I mentioned in the last segment, the interior offensive line that's banged up against right. The interior, the Buccaneers defensive line, Kalijah Kansi and Vita Vea. But yeah, I agree with you, Steve. There's no other way to say it. The run game scares you in both areas. Like Bucky Irving, Rashad White against the Saints run defense, that's a mismatch. The Saints' interior offensive line against the Buccaneers' interior defensive line, that's a mismatch.
Shoot, we saw they couldn't stop Sean Tucker when we played him last time.
Right. So the Bucs' offensive line has also been relatively healthy this year, and they've got good pieces on there. Tristan Wirfs, left tackle. You know, Luke Adeke, who's been kind of underreported, he's been awesome at right tackle for them this year, and their interior has been solid as well. I mean, Graham Barton was someone that Mike and I really liked in the pre-draft process. And, of course, Tampa Bay would scoop him up at the end of the first round. And he's been their center right off the bat, and he's been really good. So a good offensive line, a good rushing attack versus a Saints run defense that's been suspect all year. That's definitely a concern.
We're going to take a break here on First Take. When we get back, we'll get into some calls. You can sound off to 504-260-1870 as we get ready for that noon kickoff season finale in Tampa Bay right here on WWL Saints Radio. Be right back. I want to remind everybody, Venture Global donating $10 per Saints receiving yards to their Catch for the Coast program. Venture Global innovating to provide low-cost LNG to the world. Their current donations are at $34,900. Back here on First Take as we wrap things up, getting ready for the Bud Light countdown to kick off with the Cajun Cannon. And Charlie, it's sad that we've come to the end of the year for the Saints. There'll be no postseason once again for the Black and Gold, but We can play spoiler. We've talked about not being able to really improve or hurt your draft stock right now. So why not go out there and send some misery the Tampa Bay Buccaneers way?
You could slightly improve it once again. The highest I think you can get is 8 in the draft, which is just unbelievable for a team that may finish 5-12. It's just that the bottom of the league is that bad this year. So Tampa Bay is legit, Steve, as we mentioned throughout the show, 9-7. They're looking at a 10-win season. If they can pick up a win against the Saints, their offense leads the way. They're top 4 in all these different categories. It's daunting for the Saints team heading into Tampa Bay. And
Falcons fans are cheering for the Saints.
Yeah, no, as Bobby said, right. Like Falcons fans are hoping for the Saints. And Bobby, I mentioned this as well. I think it would be the best case scenario for the Saints to win this game and the Falcons, oh, we have hope, we have hope. And then they lose to the Panthers and then they fall short of the postseason. I think that would be hilarious. That's what I'm personally rooting for today, Steve, before we get that Sunday night football game tonight.
I'm Steve Geller for Charlie Long and Cullen Steele. Thanks for tuning in to First Take. Coming up next, the Bud Light countdown to kickoff. So hang tight, Who Dat Nation. The Cajun Cannons up next here on WWL and the Saints Radio Network.